This is FM 100.5 and 101.9. AM 1450, Rutherford County's place to talk. WGNS, Murfreesboro, your good neighbor station. This is The Truman Show with Truman Jones. A look at the politics, news, sports, and people that are shaping Rutherford County. Now your host, Truman Jones.
Welcome to the Truman Show, but it's really the Guy Dotson Show and the Larry Major Show, and we're going to focus on anything they want to focus on today, and we want to let you know that their show is brought to you by At Home Care, and Melissa Warren started that business a few years ago to take care of the people who no longer can take care of themselves, and they're afraid they're going to be able to, are going to have to leave their home. So they go in 24/7, take care of all the responsibilities inside your home, run all the errands for you, and you can just sit back and enjoy your retirement. And give them a call at 713-4639. Pull them up on the internet, www.athomecaretennessee.com, or you can go to their place of business, At Home Care, at 237 Castlewood Drive, Suite H, and that's right behind the Kroger's on Memorial Boulevard. You know, Guy, I was talking to Larry maybe a month or two ago, and we're talking about him being back on my show, and he said, I'm not coming back on unless Guy Dotson comes on with me. And I said, well, we may be in trouble, because I'm not too sure that Guy wants to come on my show, because we've been buddies for a long time, but we've also had a lot of people out there in the audience that we've had a lot of dealings with over the years.
Yes, sir, but
hello.
If you recall, about 4 to 6 months ago, I was walking on the greenway.
Yes.
And you said something about me being on our, or Jackie said something about being on the program, and I said, well, I will, but I hadn't been invited yet. So I guess
I did invite you.
Not at that time, no, sir. You didn't invite me, but you said, I'll get around to it.
And he's, I don't got a mind like a steel's trap.
So I don't know what around to it means, but it wasn't until Larry Majors was on, and he asked you to invite me. That's how it came about. But be that as it may, we're here today, and we're here to have a good time.
Yeah, and you know, you guys grew up in an environment like no other. You grew up in Franklin County. You had almost everybody there was like family, and you had some of the more well-known people in the history of Tennessee right there in that small area.
Well, I got to tell you about that. When I first got to know anything about the Majors, and when you say Majors, the in front of their name was a little D. Mm-hmm. They were just another family. I think they came to Huntland maybe 49 or whatever. I had a brother, still have him, Leonard or Buck Dotson, and in 1949 he went from Lincoln County to live with my grandfather in Franklin County. In Franklin County. And he started out playing football under Coach Majors. And he'll tell you to this day that his major claim to fame was that he caught the first touchdown pass at Huntland that Johnny Majors ever threw.
Wow.
And it's during that period of time that I got to know the family, got to know all of them, even Bob, before I got to know Larry, because when we'd go to football games, there was this little fella out there on the sideline running up and down, throwing a football up. And then it wasn't until we got into high school that I got to know Larry. We played against one another in basketball in high school.
Grammar school also.
And then when we graduated, he went to, I think it's Swanee Military Academy, a prep school for a year. I went to Swanee for a year, dropped out. And then the year that I dropped out, he started to school. I went to Florence, Alabama for 1 year and came back to Swanee. And there was my good friend Larry Majors, and he had joined a fraternity, Phi Gamma Delta, and I'd already been in that fraternity, so it started from then, and it's been going on ever since.
What do you think about him, Larry?
I'm sorry that he's here, because I'm going to have to brag on him. He's always been a great friend. I met the Dotson family first through Buck. He played 1 year before we moved to Holland. Mm-hmm. In 1949, Danny went down there and started football, and Buck played 49 and 50, his last 2 years in high school. And in 49, I think in the last show I mentioned that my brother John, who was a freshman at Lynchburg, Danny drove back and forth from Lynchburg to Holland to do his job. Buck and John played against each other. Buck was a junior and John was a freshman. And then the next year we moved to Holland. They were going to have boys playing against him forever. So we moved over there. And at that time, Buck and Guy's family had moved from Lincoln County down to around Elora, mm-hmm. to outside of Winchester, on a farm outside of Winchester. So Guy was going to grammar school at Winchester. And of course, Buck was one of my heroes because he was a big, strong fella, good in football and real good in basketball and great in baseball. And he not only caught first touchdown pass John threw over there, but I can tell you exactly, he caught touchdowns and extra points that totaled up to 63 points, wow. which was quite a lot of points for a tight end.
And, oh, he played tight end.
Yeah, we played in both ways. Uh-huh. We used tight formation, single wing. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, you played power football back then.
Yeah.
Yeah, you were telling me how good Buck was the last time you and I
were good. Guy and I played grammar school basketball against each other. He played for Clark Moore there in Winchester, and I played for Hunter. And then when we went on to high school, there were only two public high schools in Franklin County, still are only mm-hmm. two. Rankin High in Winchester, and Holland in the southwest corner. And, of course, Rankin High is a much, much larger population. When I was in school, Rankin High had about 1,100, and we had about anywhere from 140 to 160. And that would be 4 years, 9 through 12 for both schools. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and of course, we couldn't play with them in football, but we did play. We were in the same district. They didn't have classifications back those days. So Frank and I and Holland were both in the 24th district. A lot of teams, I don't know, just almost 20 teams in there, in that south central area. And I never did feel too good about Guy when he was playing basketball. The Guy was tall, had great hands, mm-hmm. good touch. And it used to make me mad when their guys would shoot from outside and miss and hit the backboard. And Guy would go up, and he wouldn't even grab the ball. He'd just go up and take his fingertips and tip it in. And I thought, man, I wish I could do that.
You know, Guy is one of these talented people that can do anything. Everybody knows he's really good at golf. I mean, he's right there at the top of the line. But I can say I have known a lot of prosecutors in the state of Tennessee and outside the state of Tennessee. There was nobody like Guy Dotson. He could turn a phrase or do something to the defendant that nobody else could ever do. And I had a judge who was from outside this area tell me one day that he could turn a key witness who would be for the defense into an absolute useless source quicker than anybody he had ever seen.
Well, it's always good to run into a guy for different reasons. I like to be around him, always have. I loved his wife, Jeannie. She took good care of me. I used to come in there at all hours when I was single for a long time and just show up, knock on the door, and Jeannie would come to the door, and she laughs and hollered back in the other room to a guy and say, "Hey, it's Larry." And I'd hear a guy say, "Tell him to come on in." He'd feed me and give me a bed. And there's never a time that you run into Guy Dotson. He's got some homespun philosophy, mm-hmm. Has a different slant than anybody else you'll run into. And it's always, I rank him up there with Socrates, Plato, and Aristotle.
Well, I appreciate the compliment, but I never did get to meet those fellas, and I'm sure they had something on the ball. But I think I was supposed to have read something about him. But I would tell you, though, when he mentioned my wife, she knew Larry in probably before we got married. She went to a private school there at Swanee, St. Mary's, and he may have known it before then, about that time. But we thought so much of Larry, not that this is Larry Major's day, because, as I said earlier, I knew the Majors just when the in front of the Majors was a little word. Now it's all capital words because they're one of them, and I got to know all of them. But we thought so much of Larry that when we had our second child, Beth, who we thought was one of the best dispatchers the sheriff had ever hired,
and
we
still think bright. She is.
She got Larry appointed as her godfather, and she thinks the world of him now. And very seldom does any of her birthdays go by that Larry doesn't think about it. But now, back to my brother, say all the good things about him. But he did say that the whole time that he played at Huntland as a defensive end, they only scored one touchdown around his end. And I asked him, why did you let him do that? And he said, I was flat on my back. I couldn't keep from it. But I got to know John. I got to know Joe. Got to know the whole family. And I had relatives down there in that neighborhood, in that community, that played football for him. And as a matter of fact, after Coach Majors left Huntland and went to Swanee, when I went to Swanee, I tried to play basketball and I tried to play baseball. And Coach Majors was my baseball coach. And there were certain incidents and situations that came up between Coach Majors and I that I relied upon those when I got into law school, when I felt like I was having trouble. And I remember a statement Larry said that his dad said, that, well, guy's hard enough headed, he's going to make it. So I said, if Coach Majors knew I could make it through law school, I didn't know any reason why I couldn't, because he was a great judge of character. But I thought the world of all the family. Now, when I talked with you last time about him, we was talking about the athletes in the family. Mm-hmm. I believe Johnny was All-American. I think Joe was honorable mention All-American. Bill had to be All-Southeastern Conference. And then Bobby came along later, and he was All-American. But I would say this about it. There's a place in sports for all of them, but you line all the boys up and let them work out for a month on running and then have a foot race. Larry would always win that race. He ran on the track team. He didn't have to work out when they needed somebody to run the 100-yard dash. Larry would be the one to do it. So Larry has been a great friend of mine, and I've always respected him. Never heard anybody say anything, a word about him bad. And we've had a lot of mutual friends, and we've always thought the same thing of him. So now I look at him as he's in the Tennessee Sports Hall of Fame, Swanee Hall of Fame, and he's one of the Majors, so with a capital, all capital letters. So
they were blessed with great athletic talent. It seemed like every one of them, they had something special. And you know, as much as you work out and all that, Larry, you guys had a gift. You really did, because I saw some of you play, and in fact, I saw Johnny play his first game for UT, and he was so quick. I'm not talking about just blazing speed, but nobody could get their hands on him. He was just like a little jitterbug out there on the field that nobody could touch. But every one of you guys just seemed to, I guess you, I don't know if you got it from your dad, which I presume you did, Coach Shirley Majors, but what kind of influence did he have on you guys? Because every one of you had something special.
Before I try to answer that, I'd like to say about my mother that I'd be hard pressed to try to figure out which was quicker with physical quickness, my mother or my daddy. So genetically, I think no question in our minds that we my siblings and myself, that we got good genes, athletic genes from both of our parents. My mother didn't get a chance to play sports because they didn't have them in high school where she went to the Lynchburg at the time, late 20s, the time she went to school. But she was a good swimmer. Daddy, it's very difficult to try to put into words how he influenced us. He had sort of a quiet smooth demeanor about him most of the time. Had a lot of fun about him with his friends, but he knew the difference in what was big and what was not big in the way of what kids did. He didn't pay any attention to a lot of the things that we did that some people would get on to their kids about. But things that were serious, we never did steal anything or anything like that. But if we didn't show proper respect to a grown-up, or if we didn't take the proper responsibility of something we were supposed to do and finish the job, things like that, he would really, well, he'd give you a look that you didn't want to see first, and then he'd sit you down and talk to you a long time about why you should do a certain thing, why you shouldn't do certain things. And then he was not one to beat on you. He didn't give whippings much, but if he gave you one, it lasted a long time.
Did you see at a young age, when you guys were all growing up together, you and Guy, did you have any clue of how he was going to turn out? Was he a studious type person? Was he outgoing, the type of person that you would feel like that would be in a position to be the most powerful person in a community like he was here in Rutherford County?
Talking about my daddy?
No, I'm talking about Guy.
So Guy, well,
I know he had to have been a cut up.
I had the advantage over most people that knew Guy, because I'd spent a lot of time with Guy, because I liked to be around him. And even though we lived in different communities, they weren't that far apart. And my daddy worked as a barber on weekends in the summer, so I'd go up to Winchester and I'd see Guy when I could. Mm-hmm. And I learned early on from my daddy that there's more to being academic or being a attorney general or district attorney than being able to memorize a law book.
Right.
And that, as my daddy liked to say, he used the word sense. He said, I don't care about somebody that's just reads a book and doesn't have any sense.
Common sense.
He used the word sense. Right. Don't have sense. He referred to a person, that man, you don't pay attention to that man, he doesn't have any sense. And so, in fact, one time when I was quite old, about 30 years old, he has questioned the direction I was going and asked me, well, you don't ever seem to socialize much. And I said, I can't. I don't have any money. He said, well, you ever have a date? And I said, well, not much, because I don't have any money. I said, I've had a few dates with this, and I won't call names, with this beautiful young lady that her daddy's a banker friend of yours. And he said, well, does she have any sense? And I said, she's very very intelligent. And he stuck his chin out and raised his voice and said, I didn't ask you if she was intelligent. I asked you if she had any sense. It's not the same thing. So I knew right off that Guy Dawson had a lot of sense and that he was a very smart man. And I never doubted Guy being whatever he wanted to be.
He could read people better than anybody else.
Oh, absolutely.
He really could.
Yeah.
Now that you've had to say that, I want to go back to something that you asked Larry about the influence that his father had on him. Mm-hmm. But there was two girls in the family, and the rest of them were boys. And it wasn't one person in charge of that family. You can say what Coach Majors did this, Coach Majors did that. But the lady that kept everybody in order, and I think kept Coach Majors in order, was Mrs. Majors, small in stature, but big in ideas. And I hate to tell this on my wife, but I'm going to tell it on.
Excuse me, but I only have one sister, Shirley Ann, who's named after Daddy.
But I said there's two ladies.
Okay,
the
okay.
The mother and the sister.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know that.
Yeah.
But while I was going to Swanee, my wife Jean taught school up there. And so there's some of the boys at Swanee were maybe a year or two older than they should have been going to the grade school. But one day, my wife Jean said, "Miss Majors, I don't know what I should do." Said, "Some of these boys, when I leave school, stick your head out the window and whistle at me." And she said, "I don't know how to take that." She said, and this is days of short mini skirts. She said, "I'd suggest that you wear your dresses a little longer." And she just walked on, and that was the end of that. But from that day forth, she wore longer shirts, longer dresses, skirts. Miss Majors was a great influence in the whole family, and they were respected. And one thing I like to say about people, and I said it about Larry, I've never heard anybody say anything bad about the family. A lot of people were jealous of them because of what they could do and what they did do, but they were good people. And I'm surprised that, I don't know if y'all have gotten to this or not, but Johnny was so good in college that he lost out on the Heisman Trophy winner. Yes. Although UT won maybe every game but one, and the guy that won it played on a team. I think they only won three football
games.
Two games. But since he was in the East, Northeast, or United States, at Notre Dame, anything that those people wanted, they got. And so I'll say in that case, Johnny didn't get a fair shake.
But he didn't.
He came out okay.
And Paul Horning is the one that beat him, and he was the golden boy. So the media loved him.
Yeah,
that's how he got it.
He was a great player.
And of course, Notre Dame, even today, they still have a great deal of pull. And we have a caller for us on the show, so we're going to have to put our ears on. Caller, welcome aboard with Guy Dotson and Larry Majors.
Brother Truman,
hey.
Larry Majors, huh? That's Shirley Majors' son.
Yes, sir.
Which one of the brothers that got killed in Knoxville?
That was the third oldest, Bill.
Bill won it.
Yeah, Bill was assistant coach to Doug Dickey, and in 1965, they had just tied Alabama and Birmingham 7-7. Tennessee's defense made a strong stand at the end of the game, and I could go in detail, but I don't guess people want to hear that. But anyway, my brother coached the defensive backs, and then that following Monday morning, he and there were two other coaches that lived in the same vicinity, and they picked up my brother, and right down below his house, they went across the railroad track, and they, according to the engineer, it appeared to him that they were in a Volkswagen. It appeared to him that the motor died, and that's probably what happened and killed off him.
Yeah, Bobby was the youngest, wasn't he?
Yes, sir.
What was your sister's first name?
She goes by first and middle name. So my daddy's name is Shirley.
Yeah, I knew him.
And my sister's name for daddy.
I knew. All of you.
So she goes Shirley Ann to distinguish between Shirley, her daddy, and
that's
herself.
Right.
And my mother's first name is John, and my brother's John's name for my mother. So we're a little messed up, I guess you might say.
Yeah, I refereed basketball for
him. Yeah, well, what's your name, sir?
Kid. Well, you know me. When I lived in Shelbyville then, I was known around there, Carlton, McCarty, and
yes, sir.
And here I know James and Mac.
Yeah.
I know Brother Guy there. He knows me.
Yes, I know who you are. Yes, sir.
Yeah, I know that gymnasium over there, you had a big old steam pipe down there, all the gold down there,
yes.
And I grabbed it the first time I ever went in there.
That's right.
Oh,
had those old fan shaped backboards that. It worked very big.
Yeah, you're exactly right.
Stage.
Yeah, I always liked to go up at Huntland. That is Huntland where it was at. And,
yes, sir.
I remember when Bobby was small, he'd get that basketball at the half and want to shoot them goals and things. I refereed all around there. I guess you remember Bill Pack, Norman
absolutely.
Curtin.
Absolutely. Remember
Burl Krause.
All of those men, referee games that I played.
And then you remember Mr. Jerkin Hickey.
Yes, sir.
I think I was 16 years old, and he let me help him referee a Sunday basketball game over at Union Royal.
You're talking about some great.
That's when you had one official.
That's right. Pistol Gaither, you remember him?
Oh, yeah.
That was the days we had a lot of great basketball officials in those days.
Yeah. Did y'all know Jimmy McKnight?
I'm not familiar with him myself.
No. I imagine Guy didn't know. He worked down there. The first time I met him was down at Cannon County, Auburn Town. I went down and he was the boys basketball coach down there. Then when the Navy came out, I met him here in Murfreesboro. I just wanted to call in and
It's been nice to talk with you.
Yes, sir. Thank you. You live here in Murfreesboro?
I live in Estill Springs, Franklin County.
Yeah, I've got a son-in-law. My granddaughter lives in Estill Springs. She's a RN nurse over there somewhere. I don't know. And he works for Nissan down there, Troy Brown.
Troy Brown. I've heard that name.
Oh, yes. Man. And he's a supervisor way up in the engine out there. He was down here at Smyrna, and he went there. But I just wanted to say hello, especially
to
Truman
so
and Brother Guy. I run into Brother Guy once in a while at Kroger's.
Well, we appreciate
you
calling. Thank you. Bye. And we want to let you know that this portion of the show is brought to you by Stan McNabb Automotive, where they provide quality vehicles from Chevrolet, Dodge, Jeep, Ford, and Cadillac to the Murfreesboro, McMinnville, and Shevable, Tennessee area. Their large selection ensures that they have a vehicle for everyone, no matter what it is you're looking for. And for a quality used car in Tullahoma, visit their dealership located at 2000 North Jackson Street. They have a large inventory of pre-owned cars, trucks, SUVs, and minivans to select from. At Stan McNabb Automotive, they pride themselves in the quality that they offer on all of their used cars, which makes them a major destination for used vehicles.
This is Councilman Ron Washington, and I'm asking for your vote April 17th. I have proven my commitment to this community through volunteerism, service, and your trust. Serving a community is not just local involvement, it's regional and national. Experience matters. Vote Ron Washington, City Council. Early voting is March 28th through April the 12th. Election day is April 17th. I am Ron Washington, and I approve this message.
Murfreesboro Medical Clinic is more than just a clinic. It's the doctors you can trust, a technician you can believe in, and a staff member who goes the extra mile. From the time someone walks in our doors, the difference becomes evident. All of our resources are used to improve the healthcare experience of our patients, and we have been a part of Rutherford and surrounding counties for over 60 years. Murfreesboro Medical Clinic.
Murfreesboro.
Slick Pig Barbecue. Down on East Main, there's pork, beef, chicken, and wings. Sauce too good to be true.
Now at Slick Pig Barbecue, try the catfish special. Wednesday night between 4 and 8 o'clock. $9.99 plus tax for all you can eat catfish. The meal includes hush puppies, white beans, and homemade coleslaw.
Slick Pig Barbecue, 1920 East Main.
Did you get a sad face after your emissions test?
Come by Todd's Complete Auto Care and we'll get your car to pass and put a smile on your face.
This is Amy at Todd's Complete Auto Care Center. We'll even take it through emissions for you.
Todd's Complete Auto Care on Southeast Broad across from the Discovery Center.
Come see me.
This is Good Neighbor Events, brought to you by the Rutherford Home Show, Saturday mornings at 11:30 on WGNS, the Omni Hut Restaurant in Smyrna, and AmeriCare Pest Control.
Hello, I'm Dave Gober with First Community Mortgage.
And Dean Higby with South Branch Nursery.
Be sure to tune in every Saturday from 11:30 to 12:30 for the Rutherford Home Show presented by Old South Properties.
We are joined each week by local professionals to give helpful information about your home and the local community.
We also give you local real estate stats and rate information.
Join us here on WGNS for the Rutherford Home Show every Saturday, 11:30 to 12:30.
Let's check some good neighbor events from WGNS. And if you live in the city limits of Murfreesboro, early voting for the city election now through April the 12th. You're voting for 3 Murfreesboro City Council members and 4 Murfreesboro City School Board members. Early voting is available at the Election Annex at 426 East Vine Street, over at SportsCom on Memorial Boulevard, and at Blackman Elementary School on Fortress Boulevard. In addition, you can early vote now at the Election Commission office on the south side of the Murfreesboro Square. Once again, early voting for the City of Murfreesboro elections now through April the 12th. And Election Day is Tuesday, April 17th. And your income tax will be prepared for free if your total family income is $50,000 or less. This is being done at 2 locations, one of them at the Greenhouse Ministries over on Spring Street. The other one's at the St. Clair Street Senior Center, and at that location, that's for persons age 60 plus only. And you do have to have an appointment at the St. Clair Street location. The Bible Reading Marathon is April the 29th through May the 3rd at the Bible Pathways Ministries on West Thompson Lane. Those are Good Neighbor events.
Hi, I'm Dr. Michael Jordan, an orthopedic surgeon with Middle Tennessee Medical Center. As the official health care providers of the MTSU Blue Raiders, we know the importance of getting players healthy and back in the game. Middle Tennessee Medical Center provides comprehensive orthopedic care with expertise to return each patient to an active and functional lifestyle. Our team is highly experienced in orthopedic and joint replacement surgery, which means better outcomes and quicker recoveries. To make an appointment with an MTMC orthopedic specialist, call 615-284-BONE.
He knows Rutherford County's past, and his wisdom can give good insight into our future. It's the Truman Show. Here again, Truman Jones.
And welcome back with Guy Dodson and Larry Majors. You know, you can tell when somebody has come from an area where there's a lot of respect. And like Larry was saying earlier, common sense. And Guy, that had to been a great boost for you in your career when you decided. With your mind, you have one of these calculated minds. It's always trying to size everything up and everything around you at the time. Why did you decide to go into law, in particular, into the prosecuting area?
It's real simple why I got into the law. When I was a senior in high school, I wanted to go to UT or Tennessee Tech to be an engineer. I went to see one of the most famous or infamous lawyers there in Winchester, and he said, "Guy," said, "have you ever thought about going to Swanee since you play baseball and basketball, and go up there and go to Swanee, and then when you get out to go to law school?" He said, "And if you get to be a lawyer," said, "you can marry any pretty woman you want to because they all think you're going to have money." So that was my senior year in high school. I walked out of his office, and I had made up my mind right then that I was going to go into the law business. And then so I applied to Swanee. I got in real quick. My friend, who went to church with him and his wife and his children, he was a good friend of a person at the university called the Red Dean. Now, I don't know how streamlined my application to get in was, but I went up there and went 1 year, quit, and then I decided I was going to go back, went back up there, graduated, and went to law school, and graduated from law school, and took the bar exam, passed it, came to Murfreesboro, went to work for a gentleman named Bill Wright. After I took the bar exam, mm-hmm. and before I got the results back, I had a wife and 2 kids here. I was making $100 a week. And then when I got my results back from the bar exam, I got raised to $125 a week. And I'd practiced a little over 2 years, and there was a vacancy that came. There was one of our judges left, and that left an opening. And so as a result of that, there were 2 people looking for this job, wanting the job of circuit judge. and I didn't know anything about anybody much, except I knew that I had bought an insurance policy from a Johnny Orr. My wife got to be good friends with his wife in a newcomers club. And somebody asked me, I told him I wanted to be either the general circuit, the district attorney general, or the general sessions judge. And so when I went to see Johnny, somebody told me to see Johnny. He said, which one of those two do you want? And I said, I want to be the district attorney general. He said, well, that means we've got to get Wiley Holloway appointed as circuit judge. A lot of people know this, but this is probably the first time it's been publicized. So Johnny Orr called the governor, told him what the deal was, told him that we'd had a judge leaving, and that for me to be appointed district attorney general, Wiley Holloway would have to appoint a judge. So he called Mr. Jim Cummings on the legislature, on the floor of the legislature, the governor did, said, call him to see if it's okay with him. And he said, is that long-legged young lawyer that practices law with my brother down there? And that was Clarence Cummings, and he said, yes. And I said, if I get the appointment, I'll keep John or Moses Melton as my assistant. Well, Mr. Cummings and Moses' father were partners, and so that sounded good. So that afternoon, I got a call from Hudley Crockett, and he said, asked me if I wanted to be that the governor wanted to speak with me, and he said, I would speak with him, and he said, I understand if Wiley Holloway's appointed circuit judge, you want to be the district attorney general. And I said, yes, sir, I do. He said, well, in the morning at 9 o'clock, I'm going to appoint Wiley as the circuit judge, and then I'm going to appoint you as the district attorney general. Me only having been here just a month over 2 years, I had no idea who Johnny Orr was or what influence he had, but later I found out that Johnny had been the governor's campaign manager, and those were in the days of patronage where you didn't get a job with the state unless the campaign manager put his approval on it, and that's how I came to be the district attorney general. I really set out to serve 2 years, run for an election, spend a lot of money that I didn't have, and then try to go into the private practice to make a lot of money, and then after I was in it for 2 years, I decided I really liked it, and that's where I stayed for 26 years.
I can't imagine you being anywhere else in law, watching you as you have represented the community all these years. What was the hardest part about being a DA? And I am thinking about, you do have a quick wit about you, but you never have seemed like the type of person that would like the political part at all, because I know that's always the difficult part for me.
Well, when I got into that position, having come up from my father said he graduated from the sixth grade, my mother said she graduated from the eighth grade, and I was one of the few in my family that ever went to college, much less get a doctorate degree. Mm-hmm. I decided somebody out there had to be someone that would treat everybody the same. I never looked down on people. I've never looked up to anyone. I've always tried to treat them as I would expect to be treated in a like situation. And as a result of that, everything just fell into place, and I was able to get along with most people. I never felt like I mistreated anybody. Never felt like I tried a case that I thought the person was innocent. And I've tried some cases where I felt like they were guilty and lost the case, but it came to be something that I really enjoyed doing.
I can attest to the fact that what Larry was talking about earlier, about what Shirley would say about sense and common sense, you were always able to utilize that in a court. It wasn't just how it was laid out in the Tennessee Code annotated or whatever. You could always see the humanity of what was going on, and you know as well or more than anybody else that the laws are written to protect the people, not to punish the people. And that is something that I always found in you when you brought up a special, if it's a capital case or something like that, you wanted, as the old adage says, you wanted all the T's crossed and the I's dotted. And I don't remember ever taking a case to you that wasn't just pretty much locked in stone by the time we got it to you.
Well, we felt like it should be, and if there was anything missing, why, I would get back with your department or the police department or use my investigator to try to get those T's crossed and I's dotted. I remember something that was said years and years ago that I've always tried to keep in mind. Back there was a governor's race, and there was a candidate from Chattanooga. His name was Old Jotty. Ran against some highly educated people. Old Jotty was probably worth in money more than all the other candidates put together, but he had only finished the eighth grade, and he'd been mayor of Chattanooga. They said he was uneducated, but as Larry's father would say, he had sense. And he said education doesn't come from grades, it comes from experience. And I had some of that experience growing up with living on the farm and dealing with people that had a lot of sense and some that didn't, and I tried to determine which ones had it and which ones didn't. And I just said, if I do what I think is right, treat everybody fair. They ever says you have to treat everybody equal. Well, you can't treat everybody equal because they're not equal in stature and in what they do. But I always try to be fair to everybody. And then at the end of the case, I didn't like losing, but I always had to accept the verdict. And I just wanted to treat people, again, as I felt like I would like to be treated if I was in a like situation.
Yeah, you and I, and I knew your philosophy very well. And we had a number of cases, and we're talking about capital murder cases, that we knew who the perpetrator was, and but the evidence was not solid enough to take it to court. And since then, the cold case units that we formed a few years ago has started bringing some of those to bear, simply because the evidence supported, along with the newfound DNA and some of the other things that they've brought up, the high-tech stuff, have supported your judgment all along. And that has to feel good to you, because if we had taken some of those cases to court during that particular time, we probably would have lost it and never had a second chance to come back after them again.
Well, there's one in particular. Your department knew the defendant. I knew the defendant. Your department and the police department, local police department, worked on it. And they had in mind going to Nashville and arresting a gentleman for it. Mm-hmm. And when they came to me, I said, no, under no circumstances can you or should you arrest that person. You don't have enough evidence to convict him. And I further explained to him that if he's arrested, he'll be entitled to a trial. We'll lose that case. And then if at some later time you think you've got enough evidence to convict somebody else, then that person has got the perfect defense to it, is that you've already said this guy did it, mm-hmm. He tried it, and he was acquitted. And so I'm thinking the case that you're thinking about, but I'm not going to use the name,
right.
I think it's 20-something years later, or however many later, DNA brought that person to justice, and he was convicted. And that was one of the better cases that I can remember that was not prosecuted, although we felt like we knew who the person was, but we didn't have sufficient proof.
You know, law enforcement, sometimes they get anxious. I mean, it's not unusual, because you get caught up in the emotions of seeing someone who has died, and a lot of time it's a pretty terrible scene. And then it's like a bloodhound. Once they get on the scene, they don't want to stop. But I have always seen you as the common force, and I always thought of that. Sometimes a law enforcement officer should never overstep his or her responsibilities. And that, it to me, was the major part of the DA's office, was always being able to use that logic and have all that information available so that you don't overstep your boundaries. And to be perfectly honest with you, I can't think of one case in all the years that I was involved in law enforcement that we ever thought an innocent man was sent to jail and punished for something that they didn't do. I don't ever remember that.
I'm satisfied in my own mind that that'll be an issue that'll never bother me, because, as I said, I never prosecuted a man that I did not think personally was guilty, and I never saw a jury convict a man for something that he wasn't guilty of. I just I don't think we ever did. Now, one of the problems that I probably didn't discuss too much with any of the chief law enforcement officers, but there was a problem that I had at times, and a lot of these young, energetic young officers would like to think they had a case and then get it before the grand jury, and their position was always, if we get a man indicted, I've done all I'm supposed to do. Well, really, that was just the start of it. Mm-hmm. But he's got to present enough proof before the grand jury, and the grand jury's proof is less than it is in trial. And then it doesn't help to get somebody indicted if you don't have enough proof to convict him. And I had to, that was one of my big pet peeves and issues I had with some of the officers, having to explain to them that you may get somebody indicted, but that's not going to help me, it's not going to help you if we don't have enough proof to get him convicted. Now, this is one of the funnest ones that ever happened between me and one of your officers. There's a young fellow that was working inside their jail, found some marijuana inside a man's cell, but the man wasn't in there at the time, and he came before the grand jury, and he had him arrested, came before the grand jury, and so I had to say, Greg, what proof do you have that this man had that marijuana? How could somebody, well, it was in his cell, he said, and I said, what if somebody pitched it in there? Well, the grand jury returned a no-true bill, which was proper. And when we got home, he said, Dad, you were kind of hard on me, weren't you? I said, you needed that lesson. I let him know that just because somebody else told him, go arrest that person and get him before the grand jury, didn't have proof that he did it, didn't want to waste my time, his time, your time. And so the grand jury returned a no-true bill. But I always did what I thought was right, and when I left that office, I was satisfied with the job that I had done.
You had a great office back then. You had Mose Melton, who was one of the, a prince of a guy, just one of the nicest people I've ever known. And he was laid back, and the one that I can remember probably as much as any is Ms. Martindale. I mean, you're talking about ruling with an iron hand. When you came in that office, you said, yes, ma'am, as soon as you came through that door.
Well, if we got time, I can tell a funny story on her now. She's deceased, and I'm out of office, and enough time's gone by. But when I first went to work, it was myself as the DA, one part-time assistant. I had a part-time secretary, Mrs. Martindale. Mm-hmm. The judge had a part-time secretary, Mrs. Martindale, and the court officer, the court reporter was Mrs. Martindale. So when I took over, I was 28 years of age. I had some work put off on me that wasn't my responsibility, but I was in charge of getting the cases set, and we may have 10, 12 cases up. But if we got them worked out, the guilty pleas would be over by 10 or 10:30. So some gentleman came in about 11 o'clock. He was late. I wasn't in the courthouse. The judge wasn't in the courthouse. So she said, what are you up here for? He said, well, I was supposed to be in court this morning. Well, what were you going to do? He said, I was going to plead guilty to driving on revoked and go to the workhouse for 10 days. And he said, I don't want to have to come back. She said, very well, just have a seat. She typed up an order, called the workhouse, had him to come pick up the man. Take him back to the workhouse, and when the judge got back back at the office the next day, she said, oh, this man's been sent to the workhouse. He was supposed to be in here, but it's late. So the judge signed the order, and from that day forward, she was Judge Martindale.
I always thought she was always Judge Martindale. I didn't have any qualms about that.
And she could get on to me, but you better never cross that line and let her hear you getting on to me, because she took care of us. But when I went to work there, it was myself and one part-time assistant, Moses, and then I got another assistant. And I think when I retired June the 30th of 1995, and I had years left on my term, I'd been in office 26 years, mm-hmm. I think I had five or six assistants, and General Weitzel, who was one of those assistants, and he was a very good assistant. He was appointed by the governor.
He's one of the sharpest people that I've known. You couldn't have picked anybody better. And I remember the day that you called me and told me that you were appointing him to be an assistant DA. And I don't know if you remember what I responded to, because at the time Bill had, you know, long, fairly long hair, a pretty good beard.
No, it wasn't fairly long. It was long. And he had a goatee that was scraggly looking.
And you remember what I said? Are you kidding me? But it was one of the best decisions you ever made.
But yeah, go ahead. I hired him because when he was a young lawyer with that goatee, we tried two cases with him. And one case, at most, we should have had a hung jury and should have got him acquitted on the other. I mean, got him convicted on the other one. Well, he came out of both those cases with not guilty verdicts because he's as good a lawyer as there is in Tennessee, super on cross-examination. And I said, if I ever get a chance to hire him, I'm going to. And when I did, I hired him. And then I told him, not a plum, but I said, after a few years, I said, Bill, if you'll stay with me when I retire, I'll see what I can do to get you appointed. And when I retired, the governor had agreed to appoint Bill the assistant. And I wasn't going to, if he was not going to appoint him, I wasn't going to retire. But I retired after 26 years. Went in May the 12th of 69, retired June the 30th of 95. And I don't know whether I had 2 years or 5 years, however many years left on my term, but it was time for me to move on.
And we're going to take a quick break right after that.
Middle Tennessee Christian School is holding a spring fling event on April the 14th, and you're invited to participate. The day will start with a 5K run to benefit the Patrons Organization, Special Kids, and the Journey Home. The MTCS 5K will start at 7 with a fun walk to begin at 8. Later in the afternoon on the 14th, there will be a shopping bazaar at 3 and a spaghetti dinner at 4. MTCS will hold a special trivia contest on the evening of April the 14th at 7. Everyone is invited to attend the MTCS Spring Fling on April the 14th.
Hi, I'm Vice Mayor Chris Bratcher. I am running for City Council for the City of Murfreesboro. Early voting is March 28th. Election Day is April 17th. I am proud to live in the great city of Murfreesboro, and I want to continue Murfreesboro's success. So I am asking for your vote and your support for Chris Bratcher for City Council. It's been an honor to serve on your Murfreesboro City Council. Murfreesboro is a great city, and I want to continue to make Murfreesboro a great place to live, work, and to play. I am Chris Bratcher, and I approve this message.
Okay, Murfreesboro, the quack is back. That's right, you heard it here first. The Ducks are back in town on June 23rd for the Sudsy's Car Wash Child Advocacy Center Rubber Duck Derby. We plan to float 10,000 rubber ducks down the Stones River, all to raise money for the Child Advocacy Center of Rutherford and Cannon Counties. $5 gets a duck entered into the race for a chance to win a $5,000 cash grand prize. Starting in May, you can adopt your ducks online at duckrace.com/Murfreesboro.
You are listening to The Truman Show on WGNS, AM and FM. Now back to Truman Jones.
Welcome back with us. Larry, you got caught in the middle of an argument here. You got Newt and Guy. Their memories seem to be a little bit crossed here.
Yeah, I'm a good lawyer. I stayed out of it.
Don't you? You know, you're so lucky. You've kept all your friendships all these years, and I can see why. Because the first time I met you, I liked you. I really did. I mean, you just got that type of personality.
Well, I appreciate
it. That you just kind of just draw people in.
Well. I've been fortunate to have good friends, and I contribute that to the fact that I had older siblings, not just brothers, but my sister, that got the roots planted in there, and I got the benefit of a lot of their friendships, you know, knowing their friends, and their friends having younger siblings in just different ways, yeah. But I don't do as much now that I'm married, but back when I was single, God knows this better than anybody. And I just jump in a car and sometimes jump on a motorcycle, and I just take off and go see people.
Truman, one night he came by my house. He'd been to Memphis. It was something below freezing. Pulled up in my driveway on his motorcycle and came in for a little while. We offered to let him sleep there. I don't know what we fixed for him or whatever, but it was unbelievably cold outside. He said, no, I got to get on home. And I didn't know if I'd ever hear from him again, but it was less than 30 degrees, and he got on that motorcycle and headed on up the mountain. Next thing I knew was he was at home. So
you don't seem to ever worry about anything, Larry. You just you dance to your own drum, whatever beat.
Looks are deceiving. I wear like most other people do about the basic things, but I don't talk about my worries much, and maybe that's the reason why it doesn't appear maybe that I worry. But my good friend, Guy Dotson, and Doug Clark, and Charles Clark, and Leon Clark back home, they know, they can tell it when, you know, when I'm all in a knot about something, but most people don't see it.
You ever call Ernestine Thomas?
I call Ernestine and Ray quite a bit. And then that's another couple that I used to bounce it in.
People just automatically take you in. You could travel around the country, get a job or anything.
But to look at it the other way, I wouldn't have done that if I hadn't known those people. If I hadn't thought that those people wanted to see me, I have a tendency to pick as friends really, really outstanding and good people. That makes me look good because they're good people. They're all great, wonderful people.
Truman.
And I'm still trying. I'll never catch up. I'll always be indebted to these people. And it's been kind of one way. They've done a lot more for me than I have for them. But
Truman, one night he was leaving the house. He said, "Where does Ray Thomas live?" He's on his motorcycle.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, "If you go right across out my backyard, across the golf course, and miss the lake, and go over there and run across number 14 green, Ray Thomas will be there." He said, "I believe I can find him," and took his motorcycle.
Did you go across the? You go across the golf course?
It's in
the
wintertime.
I never did ask him if he had to go across the green or not, but that was between Ray's house, but.
I kind of think it was a little bit of snow.
What did that sign say?
Rest I remember there was a little bit of snow on that golf course.
It was, yeah.
I wish I'd seen that. You wouldn't have had a movie camera at that time, would you? Well, Newt, it's good to have you on. You popped up here at the last minute. And of course, I know you're friends with everybody here. And you played baseball with the guy, I think you said.
That's right. We're going to sort of figure out which year and well, we both played on the same team, but no, Guy played for Coach Majors, and Coach Majors coached baseball up there in addition to football, obviously.
Now, Guy and I are the same age. In fact, all three of us, Larry and Guy, and all of us are the same age.
Right, right.
We're all 48.
I graduated in 64 from college.
Oh, I said you didn't graduate from high school in 64.
No, 59.
Yeah.
Should have been in 63, but I took a sabbatical and left and came back.
It's been a long trip, hasn't it?
Been a good trip.
It has been a good trip.
Not too many rough bumps out there. So.
No. I appreciate it. I mean, this has been a good show for me. I've really enjoyed it. It's just like old home week for me. Anybody want to say anything? Bye to anybody.
It's been real fun, Truman. It's my second time, and I tell you, I really enjoyed this. I've never done this before.
You're going to come back on
except
again.
The two times with you.
Right.
I sure hope you'll ask me back.
Oh, I will.
Since you enjoy this so much, and I understand you get a lot of publicity, it's not my place to say it, but maybe you'll get a little raise out of all this. Pay you more money.
Now, who's going to get a raise? Me?
Yeah.
You have to make something to get a raise.
Well, you get a start in a raise.
This is fun for me.
I'll give you another attaboy after it's over.
Oh, thank you very much. And we'll see you guys tomorrow, and we have Mr. Jack Jolly on tomorrow. And he's getting ready to be honored, I think, Wednesday.
Are we still on that?
Yes, sir.
That's great.
I would like for you to ask Jack Jolly a question for me.
Okay.
He was refereeing a junior pro basketball game. Thomas Mosby, who went on to do well in life, and maybe got his doctor's degree, and my son and some more people were playing, and Jack wrongfully called a walking charge on him, and Jack said, "Let me have the ball." The little boy bounced the ball to Jack, and Jack called a technical on him. I said, "What did he say, Jack?" He said, "He didn't say anything. He just looked mean at me." I'll go to my grave knowing that that's the truth. So if you'll ask Jack if he ever, and it was Thomas Mosby.
Ah, Jack would have made a great judge, wouldn't he?
Yeah, for a day.
Yeah. we could have talked forever. I mean, we could go another 3 or 4 hours about all the memories and the community things
but
that have gone on.
Write that down and say, "Jack, I had some fella to say you called him a tactical on a 10-year-old boy, said he looked mean at you."
And it was Thomas Mosby?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then later in life, Jack got to be in a baseball scout.
Oh, yes. White Sox.
And the guy that helped him get that job was John Sammy Dotson, who's my brother.
Oh, really?
My brother was a scout for years and helped Jack get that job.
I never knew that.
Yeah. He's got a big old
Which team?
He was with the Mets, and then they won the pennant, and then he went and got a job, went with the Dodgers because they were paying about twice as much.
Of course.
So since he left them, everybody in the organization got a World Series ring except him.
Oh.
But then when he went to the Dodgers next year, they won one, and he'd rather have one with the Dodgers. He's got a big World Series ring because he was a scout than he would have from the Mets. And if he'd stayed with the Mets, why, he wouldn't have got the one from... He'd only had one, so he wound up getting one anyway. But he helped Jack Jolly get his job.
That's amazing. And yeah. I will be asking him. But I bet you he's listening.
I hope he is. He needs to learn some things about coaching basketball and refereeing, I mean. And his father was a court officer. Did you know that?
Yes. Oh, I opened the court better than anybody I've ever heard. It'd make chills go down your back when he would open the court.
Slobber all over me.
We'll see you guys tomorrow.